Graphic Audio, a movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Simon R. Green's Forest Kingdom Saga, Beyond the Blue Moon. Narrated by Terrence Aselford, with performances by Danny Gavigan, Ren Casey, Eric Messner, Thomas Keegan, Margie Tompros, Christopher Graybill, Casey Platt, Christopher Sheeran, Michael Glenn, Scott McCormick, Ted Stoddard, M.B. Van Dorn, Ken Jackson, Kate Foster, Yasmin Toison, Tim Getman, Joe Brack, Nanette Savard, Michael John Casey, Richard Rowan, Andy Clements, and Mort Shelby. Beyond the Blue Moon, Part 2. At the edge of the forest, just in front of the tree line, stood three horses, their riders, and a very large dog. The dog, Chappie, had been raised in the Tower of the High Warlock, where he was given the gift of speech. His companion, Alan Chance, was the king's quester, having served the recently assassinated King Harold of the Forest Kingdom. He had been sent out to seek for Prince Rupert, Harold's younger brother, and Princess Julia, both of whom had left the Forest Kingdom a dozen years ago and had not been heard from since. The kingdom was in need of Rupert again to maintain stability in the wake of Harold's murder. Chance's search had taken him south of the kingdom, where he had discovered the two most incorruptible captains of the Haven City Guard, known as Hawk and Fisher. He recognized them as the object of his search, despite the changes that magic and a dozen years of hard living had wrought upon them. Hawk stood tall, dark, and no longer handsome. He wore a black silk patch over the empty socket where his right eye had once cast a naive gaze on the world. A series of old scars ran raggedly down the right side of his face, giving him a cold, sinister look. At first glance, he didn't look like much, lean and wiry rather than muscular, and building a stomach. He wore his dark hair at shoulder length, swept back from his forehead and tied at the back with a silver clasp. 35 years old, Hawk already showed thick streaks of gray in his hair. It would have been easy to dismiss him as just another sword for hire, perhaps a little past his prime, but he carried himself with a dangerous alertness, and the cold gaze of his single dark eye glared disturbingly direct and unwavering. On his right hip, Hawk carried a short-handled axe instead of a sword. He was very good with that axe. He'd had a lot of practice. Isabel Fisher was at his side, as though she belonged there and always had. 32 years old, easily 6 feet in height, her long hair, now black, fell to her waist in a single thick plait, still weighted at the tip with a polished steel ball. She was handsome rather than beautiful, with a raw-boned harshness to her face that contrasted strongly with her deep blue eyes and generous mouth. Some time ago, something scoured all the human weaknesses out of Fisher, and it showed. Her clothing fit tightly enough to leave no doubt that she was a woman, and she usually revealed a generous amount of bosom, mostly to distract a male opponent in a fight. When she wore her shirt sleeves rolled up above the elbow, she revealed arms corded with muscle and lined with old scars. She wore a sword on her hip, as simple and unadorned as a butcher's tool, and her hand rarely strayed far from its handle. It rested there now, as she and the others paused at the edge of the woods, looking across the cleared land toward the place Hawk had once called home. They had stopped to savor this moment of homecoming, or perhaps just to put off the moment when they'd have to move on. Past the meadow where they stood lay a dark-watered moat, and beyond that, Forest Castle. Truth be told, the structure didn't look like much from the outside. To the untutored eye, it looked like just another time-battered castle, and a good sight smaller than most. The great stone walls were cracked and pitted from long exposure to the elements, and here and there could clearly be seen patches of white against the gray, where new stone had been brought in to make repairs after the demon's final assault in the last hours of the long night. The tall, crenellated towers had a battered, lopsided look, and the flags on the battlements hung limply in the hot air of the breezeless day. But within the walls that had served 15 generations of forest kings was contained a much larger castle, with 1,000 rooms to every wing, banquet halls and ballrooms, servants and guards' quarters, stables and kitchens and courtyards, and more than a few wonders and mysteries, of which the most recent, or the oldest, depending on how you looked at it, was the inverted cathedral. Hawk looked at what had once been his home and actually felt vaguely nostalgic for a while, until he remembered how they'd treated him the last time he'd come home, bringing with him Princess Julia and a dragon he'd been supposed to kill. Chance stole a glance at Hawk.
You're scowling again. All right, what is it this time? Did you have any good memories of your past life here?
Hawk shifted in his saddle.
Not many. I don't know what the legends say about my early days, but the truth is, I was despised, discounted, and unnoticed by just about everyone. I was the second son never to be king. That was always Harold's destiny. He always looked the hero's part, I never did. So my father sent me out on a quest, ostensibly to prove my worth, to find and slay a dragon. In reality, I was supposed to take the hint and just keep on going into exile, and thus remove a potential threat to Harold's succession. Apparently, I was too honorable, or too dumb, to see that. So I made my way through the Tanglewood and the Darkwood, climbed Dragon's Lair Mountain, and found my dragon. And Princess Julia. I befriended them both, and brought them back home with me. I think it's fair to say absolutely no one was pleased about that. Harold actually challenged me to a supposedly friendly duel, so he could knock me around in front of an audience, and put me firmly back in my place, as he'd done so many times before. But I'd learned a lot in my time away. I defeated him right there in front of everyone. That felt really good until the champion did the same thing to me. He did everything but carve his initials on me to remind me of my proper station. I think the idea was to make me look like less of a threat to Harold. But at the same time, the champion did enjoy proving he was still the best. You look shocked, Chance.
I can't believe they never respected you. You're Hawk. Were you always treated like that?
Pretty much.
Fisher turned understanding eyes on her husband.
They were vile. They never appreciated him, even though he was always the best of his family.
Well, you'll find much has changed here since then. Your memory is revered now, and yours, Fisher.
Yeah, some things never change. I'll probably still have to kick ass and generally act up to get anything done. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too.
They grinned at each other, remembering happy times. Chance stirred uncomfortably in his saddle. Every now and again, he wondered if he was doing the right thing in bringing Hawk and Fisher to a court that already had more than its fair share of troubles. He decided it was time for another change of subject.
The castle interior is probably much as you remember it. Rooms and locations still change back and forth, according to their own impenetrable logic. And directions still vary according to which day it is when you ask. Though it must be said, those rooms nearest the inverted cathedral tend to change places more rapidly than most. Perhaps because they're afraid to stay close to it for any length of time. The Seneschal is still the only one who knows where everything is at any given time. He and his staff are still on top of things. Mostly.
Huh. How is the old stick in the mud? He was always a game old guy. He never approved of me, but heck, no one did back then. Is he still a major pain in the ass?
He's mellowed somewhat. Marriage and children coming late in life seem to have settled him down. As long as you catch him on a good day.
How does he feel about the inverted cathedral?
Officially, he's still studying it. Unofficially, it scares the crap out of him, just like everyone else. It's the one place in the castle he's never been, and he has stated loudly, for the record, several times, that wild horses couldn't drag him inside the unnatural construction. But he's still the first one to listen whenever the scholars in the libraries turn up some new fact, a story, or rumor about the inverted cathedral's history.
That doesn't sound like the Seneschal I remember. I was there when he led an expedition to rediscover the missing south wing. I never saw him frightened of anything, even when we ran into a bunch of demons. The Seneschal I knew never backed down from anything.
The inverted cathedral is different. Well, once it rose up into the heavens, now it plunges down into the depths.
I know, you told us. So what? I was there when the Seneschal came across an upside-down tower during our search for the South Wing. It was weird as hell, but he was the first one through the door.
You don't understand. No one knows how deep the cathedral goes now. Some say it goes all the way down to hell.
Hawk and Fisher considered this.
We saw the demon prince sitting on a rotten throne in the heart of the Darkwood. I think we've already seen everything hell has to offer.
Sure. And we lived in Haven for 12 years. There's not much that throws us anymore.
They rode on into the meadow, and no one challenged them. The quiet of the great man-made clearing, after so long among the living noise of the woods, was almost threatening. The castle grew steadily larger and more imposing as they approached it. Hawk found his right hand had dropped to his axe without him even noticing. Fisher was scowling so hard it must have hurt her forehead. Even Chance looked troubled, though Hawk couldn't help thinking that was probably more due to him and Fisher than to the castle. They crossed the clearing without incident and came to the moat. It looked pretty much as disgusting as Hawk remembered it. Dark shapes swam slowly through the murky waters, half hidden by the layers of shifting scum on the surface. Hawk stopped his horse just before the lower drawbridge and stared down into the moat. Fisher stopped beside him.
Chance, is the moat monster still in there guarding the castle?
Chance reined in his horse.
Oh yes, him and his offspring.
Hawk and Fisher looked at him sharply.
Offspring? What the hell did he mate with?
No one's ever really liked to ask.
They rode on across the drawbridge, the heavy wood hardly shaking under the weight of the horses, riders, and Chappie. Dark things with improbable shapes popped their heads up through the scum of the water to take a look at the new arrivals, but were always gone again before Hawk and Fisher could get a good look at them. They seemed mostly interested in Chappie, who ignored them all with cutting indifference. They rode on through the towering stone keep and the open gatehouse, and on into the castle's main courtyard. The waiting crowd assembled there could no longer contain themselves. Their wild cries of welcome all but drowned out the official welcoming fanfare. Hawk's horse immediately tried to turn and bolt, and for a while he was too busy struggling to control his horse to understand what was happening. He actually had his axe half-drawn before he realized the huge crowd was actually pleased to see him. Though to be honest, they seemed to be mostly cheering the return of the king's quester, Alan Chance. He smiled and waved graciously about him, as though perfectly used to such treatment. And Hawk supposed he was. The quester was a real hero. The courtyard was packed wall to wall with people jumping up and down and craning their necks for a better view of the new arrivals. A large, professionally painted banner high up on the far wall blazed the words, "Welcome home, Prince Rupert and Princess Julia, saviors of the Forest Land." Apparently, garbled word of the quester's return preceded him, and the crowd gathered to celebrate the successful completion of his mission. Two young pages in full ceremonial uniforms stood proudly at attention on a raised dais below the welcome banner, holding the two royal crowns of the Forest Kingdom on purple velvet cushions. But already the roar of the crowd was beginning to die away as the people looked eagerly for the legendary figures of Prince Rupert and Princess Julia and didn't see them. The quester they knew, and his companion Chappie, but the two shabby figures with him looked nothing like the official portraits of Rupert and Julia. So the crowd looked beyond Hawk and Fisher, hoping to see someone else, someone more impressive, behind them. And when it became clear that there was no one else, the crowd's noise died away quickly in confusion. The musicians were the last to get the message and carried on playing as Chance and Hawk and Fisher rode their horses slowly through the middle of the crowd. Finally, the instruments fell silent as the musicians realized something was wrong, and the three riders and Chappie crossed the last of the distance in stony silence. Chance reined in his horse at the front of the great stone stairway leading up to the main door and dismounted. Hawk and Fisher swung down to join him in a silence so complete their every movement could be heard. They kept their hands near their weapons. They knew how quickly the crowd's mood could change, especially if it's just been denied something it really wants. Chance was doing his best to look undisturbed, but Chappie was sticking close to him, glaring at the crowd as though daring them to start something. Hawk caught a movement out of the corner of his eye and spun around sharply as the main door slammed open and a familiar face appeared, followed by a lot of guards. Hawk and Fisher moved to stand close together as Sir Vivian Hellstrom, High Commander of the Castle Guard, strode down the steps to face them. Sir Vivian's gaunt, raw-boned face was so pale as to be almost colorless, topped with a thick mane of silver-gray hair. There was a calm and studied stillness to his face that suggested strength and determination, but his eyes gave him away. They were hard and unyielding, fanatic's eyes. He was lean and wiry rather than muscular, but there was a deadly grace to his few economical movements. Once he'd been Lord Vivian, and a major player in castle society, but Harold, then Prince Harold, revealed Vivian's plot in a conspiracy against King John, and so Vivian lost his lordship and his freedom. But because Vivian was who he was, King John gave him a second chance. He sent Vivian out to defend the most exposed peasants in the Long Night during the Demon War, with the promise of a pardon if he returned alive after the war. Vivian had always been a survivor, so he came back victorious and a hero to the peasants. King Harold knighted him for his services and put him in charge of castle security. Vivian Hellstrom, hero of Tower Rouge, a legend in his own right and a pardoned traitor. Hawk could see the naked suspicion in Fisher's cold gaze as she looked on the High Commander. He stayed close to her, though whether to protect her from Vivian or Vivian from her, he wasn't sure. Fisher had never been one to forgive and forget. A full company of armed and armored guards filed out of the main door behind Vivian, spreading out to take up what could have been either ceremonial or defensive positions. Hawk remembered earlier times when he had returned from fighting the kingdom's battles only to be faced with cold ingratitude from the very people he was protecting. Maybe nothing had changed after all. All eyes turned to Alan Chance.
Greetings, Sir Vivian. It's good to be home again. Thanks for the welcome. Nice turnout.
Good to see you again, Sir Quester. Where are Prince Rupert and Princess Julia?
Ah, that's something of a long story, I'm afraid.
As Chance took Sir Vivian aside and launched into the story, smiling bravely all the while, Hawk took the opportunity to distract Fisher by filling her in on the background of Vivian Hellstrom's legend.
In the beginning, there had been the two Hellstrom brothers, Vivian and Gawain, more famous for their parentage than anything else. Their father was the High Warlock, their mother that most notorious and evil sorceress, the Night Witch, who lived alone deep in the Darkwood. The first anyone knew of the twins' existence was when the Night Witch sent them as babies to the Forest Castle, carried tenderly by demons right up to the front door of the castle. A short note gave their names and their parentage and a prophecy that one day they would save the forest land. The king summoned the High Warlock from a nearby tavern. He stayed just long enough to acknowledge them as his, then turned them over to foster parents and went straight back to his tavern. When the Hellstrom brothers came of age, they enlisted in the Forest Army and saw much action in the vicious border disputes of the time between the Forest and Hillsdown. Most notably, they defended Tower Rouge at Hobb's Gateway, standing alone after all their comrades were killed, facing down a whole battalion of Hillsdown troops until reinforcements could arrive. Their brave stand saved the kingdom from imminent invasion and made them legends. My father, King John, knighted them both. When I was young, songs were still sung about that brave stand at Tower Rouge and the two noble warriors who would not be beaten, despite all the odds against them.
You can't trust songs. Hell, you've heard some of the songs they sing about us. I only ever knew Vivian as a conspirator and a traitor. Anything else I ought to know about the Hellstrom brothers?
Gawain settled in Redheart these days. Left the forest under something of a cloud, I gather. He has one child, the Seneschal, here at Forest Castle. Prince Rupert met their mother, the Night Witch, once.
What was that?
Sir Vivian loomed suddenly over them.
How do you know that? That's never been a part of Rupert's legend.
Hawk decided he was going to have to be very careful in the future what he said about Prince Rupert.
Oh, that's the legend as we heard it in the South, Sir Vivian. But I'm sure you know how much a story can change on its travels. Has Chance explained things to you?
He has. I don't believe a word of it. I'm supposed to believe you're here out of the goodness of your hearts? To help a king and country you know nothing of? Why should you do such a thing?
Why did you stand your ground at Tower Rouge against impossible odds?
Sir Vivian looked hard at Hawk and Fisher. They did their best to stand easy, entirely calm and unruffled. But this was the first real test of their new identities. Sir Vivian had good reason to remember Princess Julia, But in the end, he just adopted an expression that said he was unimpressed.
So the prince and princess won't be coming back, despite our most desperate need. Perhaps you would care to explain why.
They're needed elsewhere, a matter of conscience and duty. I'm sure you can understand that.
Hawk looked about him. The great crowd in the courtyard was still silent, hanging on his every word. Hawk decided to concentrate on Sir Vivian, who was marginally less disconcerting.
We are Hawk and Fisher, guard captains. We have a lot of experience in investigating and solving murders. Rupert and Julia authorize us to act on their behalf here, to speak with their voices and exercise their authority.
And why would they choose you?
Because we're very close.
You have some proof of your office here, of course.
Of course.
Fisher handed over the letter of introduction Hawk prepared earlier.
It's in Rupert's own hand, signed by both Rupert and Julia, and bears the prince's seal at the bottom. You do recognize the royal seal of the Forest Kings, don't you?
Sir Vivian scowled, but nodded reluctantly. There had only ever been three royal seals, one each for John, Harold, and Rupert. Handed down through generations of the Forest line, they were magical constructs and could not be duplicated. The letter might have been forged. The seal, never. He handed the letter back to Hawk and then glowered at Hawk and Fisher equally.
What precisely was so important that the prince and princess could turn their backs on the forest land?
Well, that's their business.
I have a right to know.
No, you don't. If they'd wanted you to know, they'd have put it in the letter. All you need to know is they're not coming. But we are here to do everything they would.
Wonderful. This will change everything. The king's death left the court and country divided into factions almost beyond counting. Prince Rupert and Princess Julia are legends, real heroes. All sides had agreed to an uneasy peace awaiting their return. The prince and princess were the only people everyone would have trusted, or at least listened to. Once the news gets out that all we've got is you, the peace will collapse in a second. The last thing the court or this country needs is two outsiders upsetting the political process and walking all over our customs and beliefs.
Don't worry. We know how to be diplomatic.
Sure. We just don't bother, usually.
Sir Vivian looked deeply unhappy and just a little shocked. It had been a long time since anyone had dared talk back to him. As High Commander of the Guard, his position and his legend had always been enough to intimidate anyone not actually of royal birth. He was about to launch into a ferocious diatribe on correct behavior that would have seared their ears when his gaze suddenly fell on the axe at Hawk's side. He studied the wide axe in silence for a long moment, taking in the runes etched into the steel. And then he looked at Hawk with new eyes, and something very like respect.
My brother Gawain had an axe like that. Our father, the High Warlock, gave it to him after Tower Rouge, because he wanted to show how proud he was of his bastard sons. I could have had one too, but I asked for something else, which later I threw away. Where did you get that axe?
From the High Warlock. I did him a service once.
But how did you get it?
Mail order. Look, are you going to invite us in or not? We've got a hard job ahead of us, and we'd like to get started.
Very well. Against all my better judgment, I'll take you in and present you to the court. Though what they'll make of you is not my problem. Follow me. Stay close and don't wander. And Sir Questa, we will have words about this later.
Looking forward to it immensely, Sir Vivian.
Chappie padded alongside Chance.
Lies like that'll take you straight to hell.
Shut up!
They followed Sir Vivian in through the main door, and the possibly ceremonial guards fell in around and behind them. Fisher moved in close beside Hawk.
If Gawain got an axe from the High Warlock, what did Vivian get that he lost?
His lordship.
Cancel all further celebrations. Pass the word.
Sir Vivian led Chance, Hawk, and Fisher to court by the least traveled route, working on the assumption that the fewer people who knew Rupert and Julia weren't coming back, the better. At least until Hawk and Fisher had been presented and, he hoped, accepted at court. He also sent guards off with orders for the rest of the people to prepare for possible civil unrest and even rioting. Many people had invested a lot of faith in Rupert and Julia's return, and there was no telling how they might express their disappointment. Hawk had to keep from looking happily about him. It was the first time he'd been inside his home for 12 long years, and everywhere familiar sights and objects leaped out at him, bringing back memories, from old family portraits to suits of ancient armor to assorted bric-a-brac that apparently no one got around to throwing out. Even the most worthless junk can acquire a patina of worth and history if people hold on to it for long enough. Especially if there's a story attached to it, or people think there is, or there used to be. The old familiarity of home came flooding back, and it was only with an effort that Hawk remembered how glad he'd always been to get away from the castle. Prince Rupert had rarely been happy here, and with good reason. Most of the people who persecuted him and made his life miserable were dead and gone now, lost in the Demon War, but their ghosts still haunted his memory. He glanced across at Fisher to see how the castle was affecting her, but she seemed to be taking it all in her stride, as she did most things. From Sir Vivian's reluctant answers, Hawk discovered that the court was still in session, despite the late hour of the evening, under the regent, Queen Felicity. The day's business should have been concluded long ago, but apparently, with so many factions, political parties, and causes all demanding to be heard, or at least noticed, it was taking longer and longer to reach an agreement on anything. Raised voices and hot tempers were commonplace, and it was a rare session that ended without some level of bloodshed, despite all Sir Vivian's guards did to maintain order. Hawk had to get most of the details from Chance after Sir Vivian decided he wasn't talking to Hawk anymore. Anyone would think he was upset. On their way to the court, they passed through a great hall crammed full of magic users of every and any persuasion, all of them eagerly demonstrating their powers and abilities to anyone who showed an interest, or would at least stand still long enough. The raised voices, flaring lights, and sudden transformations made for a unique form of bedlam. Hawk and Fisher stopped to watch, fascinated. Most of the Forest Land's previous magicians died during the last great battle of the Demon War, poisoned by the treacherous astrologer. Afterward, rather than be left helpless in the face of possible magical attacks from neighboring Hillsdown and Redheart, King Harald put out a call for all magic users in the land, of whatever cause or quality, to come to the Forest Castle and serve the land. So they all came, eager for a chance to be put on the royal payroll. Since most of them turned out to be meagerly talented, incompetent, or outright frauds, the search continued, even today. The forest couldn't afford a magic gap. Everyone in the hall now was waiting to be seen, to be granted an audience at court to show what they could do. Hedge witches, conjurers, summoners, warlocks, necromancers, and enchanters, and one self-proclaimed messiah. Some had been camped out in the hall for days, and small stallholders were doing a brisk trade in food, wine, and toilet essentials. The noise was appalling, not least because the court hadn't actually gotten around to viewing anyone that day. In this, as in so many things, the court was running well behind schedule. One magician had apparently duplicated himself several times by accident. He was now standing in a small crowd of himself, arguing loudly over which was the original, or at least the most real. Another magician waved his hands theatrically over an upturned top hat, chanting loudly. The chant was suddenly interrupted when a huge clawed hand shot up out of the hat, grasped the magician by the throat, and then pulled him inside the hat. Those watching studied the rocking top hat for a moment, but there was no sign of the magician reappearing. One braver soul picked up the hat, turned it over, and shook it. But nothing fell out. Not far away, a self-proclaimed conjurer of devils and apparitions was loudly offering to teach magic to anyone with the right price. As proof of his abilities, he produced several impressive objects, apparently out of midair. Hawk was not impressed. He'd seen street conjurers in Haven and knew how most of the tricks were done. Conjurers had to be really impressive in Haven, because if they weren't, the audience would kill them. Of course, if they got too good, there was always the chance someone or something would turn up from the Street of Gods and do something terribly unpleasant to them for trespassing on godly territory. Miracles belonged in churches. Hawk strode over to the conjurer, spun him around twice, and slapped him hard on the back. Several startled doves shot out of the conjurer's sleeves. A firework went off, and an unconscious rabbit dropped out of the back of his coat. People began closing in on the conjurer. Hawk left them to it. Chappie ate the rabbit.
Captain Hawk, shall we proceed to court?
Hawk nodded amiably. Illusions snapped on and off around them as they made their way through the mob of magic users. Falls of multicolored hail contended with the pale wisps of ghostly butterflies. Here and there, clumps of the more intellectual practitioners were having animated discussions over the merits and or drawbacks of wild, high, and chaos magics, and threatening to turn each other into things. One had actually conjured up a blackboard so he could prove his point with angrily chalked mathematics. Somebody else was making women's clothes vanish. Hawk shook his head bemusedly.
Isabel, I thought magic was supposed to be going out of the world.
If it is, it's not going quietly.
The Academy of the Sisters of the Moon was well represented in its own stall, a registration drive, and several graduated witches in their familiar silver gowns, trying hard to look mysterious. According to chance, the Academy had been turning out witches for some time now, but they had yet to produce anything even approaching a sorceress. But witches had their uses, and their low-level magic made them welcome at hospitals, churches, and in the army. Any witch was potentially capable of becoming a sorceress, but that took time and study and experience, and apparently most witches just didn't survive that long. The world was a dangerous place, and the unseen world even more so. Chance suddenly broke away from the group and surged forward through the crowd as he recognized a familiar face among the witches. She turned to meet him, smiling sweetly. She was tall and buxom in a low-cut russet gown with a magnificent mane of flame-red hair and huge green eyes full of a happy personal magic. Her name was Tiffany. Hawk and Fisher knew this because Chance had been talking about her all the way through the forest to the castle. It seemed he was much taken with Tiffany, though it wasn't clear how she felt about him. Barely out of her teens, she was the youngest witch ever to graduate from the Academy of the Sisters of the Moon, and great things were expected of her. Powerful but naive, she believed in everything from crystals to tarot to channeling past lives to the healing powers of certain aromas. She was prone to wandering in the woods, picking flowers to give to the poor, whether the poor wanted them or not, and having long conversations with squirrels and birds and butterflies. Chance told Hawk and Fisher all of this at some length, even when they asked him very firmly not to. By now, Chance and Tiffany were clasping hands and smiling into each other's eyes. Hawk and Fisher wandered over to get a good look at this most praised person. Sir Vivian tried to protest, but they just ignored him. Chance and Tiffany were so wrapped up in each other, they didn't even notice Hawk and Fisher's approach. When their coughs didn't work, they just stood there and studied the young witch thoughtfully. Up close, there was no denying Tiffany's beauty, but her gaze and smile were just a little too vague for Hawk's liking.
It's so good to see you again, Tiffany. You're looking beautiful, as always.
That's nice. So, Alan, dear, what have you been doing with yourself?
I've traveled through the rift into the south in search of Prince Rupert and Princess Julia.
Oh, have you been gone? I hadn't noticed.
Tiffany turned her happy smile on Hawk and Fisher, not seeing Chance's crestfallen look.
Are you friends of Alan's?
We're Hawk and Fisher. We're here to investigate King Harold's murder.
Oh, good. Welcome to Forest Castle. I could have told Chance he wouldn't be able to bring back Rupert and Julia. I often channel the princess, and we have long talks.
No, you don't. I know the princess, and I can tell you right now, she's never heard of you.
Nonsense, all of it!
There was no telling where that conversation might have gone, so it was lucky for all concerned that it was interrupted by the sudden arrival of a large and blocky man in an impressive magician's gown of deepest black.
I've told you before, witch, I won't have you spreading your infantile nonsense here!
He'd shaped and trimmed his black beard to within an inch of its life and wore a large gold medallion around his neck. He ignored everyone else to scowl ferociously at Tiffany, who just smiled sweetly back at him. If anything, this seemed to upset the newcomer even more.
I don't care if you have graduated from the Snobby Sisters Academy. All this New Age waffle is a waste of everybody's time, and it threatens to bring us all into disrepute. Crystal flower sense, pyramid power, rubbish!
Have you had a good bowel movement recently, Mal? You know, missing one always makes you grumpy.
I am not grumpy!
Did you try the enema purge I recommended?
Never mind the enema! I want you out of this hall right now!
I think we can assume the enema didn't work. Who is this person, Tiffany?
I am Malvolio the Magnificent!
The magician pulled himself up to his full height.
Master of the mathematics of the universe! All who live shall bow before my genius!
What do you want to bet? He's an ex-boyfriend.
I broke it off. She was too immature for me. Now all this flower child frippery is undermining the mystery and awe of magic and could affect all of our chances of making a proper impression before the court. I want this child out of here, and I want her out now!
Have you considered personal counseling? Just lying down and talking to someone can be very therapeutic.
You see what I mean?
The magnificent Malvolio's face took on a dangerous shade of purple, and his eyes bulged half out of their sockets.
Therapy? What kind of talk is that for a real magic user? Magic is power and glory! It's all about the domination of the universe and everything in it through the superior will of the adept. And I will not allow this little...
Tell me something. When did you last get your arses hauled, if you know what I mean?
Malvolio glared at Chance.
I take pride in keeping myself pure and inviolate. Power comes from the disciplined mind.
Thought so. Personally, I've always thought there's more to life than power. I suggest you find yourself a nice, healthy girl and settle down together. In the meantime, I think you should leave. Right now. Before I decide to show you a trick I know involving this battle axe and your lower intestines.
Oh, don't hurt him, Alan. I'm sure he didn't mean to be rude. His aura's obviously out of balance. His spleen must be overproducing.
If he's still here when I've stopped talking to you, I'm going to get his spleen out so we can all get a good look at it.
He looked around slowly and deliberately, just in time to see Malvolio the Magnificent stalking away, his chin held up so high it must have hurt his neck. Tiffany looked at Chance reproachfully.
You've upset him now.
I certainly hope so. Some people should be upset as a matter of principle, on a regular basis. It's good for their souls. You never told me he used to be your boyfriend.
He was just a friend. I have lots of friends.
Chance decided to change the subject before it went somewhere he might not like. He reached inside his jerkin.
I brought back a present for you, Tiff. All the way from Haven. It's a powerful city-state in the south.
Oh, how sweet of you, Alan. I love presents. What have you brought me?
Chance smiled and brought out from inside his jerkin a flat red box tied with a pink ribbon. Tiffany all but snatched it from him.
Oh, how lovely.
She ripped away the ribbon and dropped it to the floor and pried open the box. She dropped that unceremoniously to the floor, too, as she concentrated on the glowing blue crystal in a delicate silver filigree setting.
Oh, my!
Tiffany turned the crystal back and forth to catch its gleam in the changing light. She leaned forward to peck Chance on the cheek, and he blushed like a child. Tiffany didn't notice. She was already studying the crystal again.
Oh, Alan, it's beautiful! How thoughtful of you! The crystal has very positive vibrations.
And then she peeled away the intricate silver setting with her fingers and let it drop to the floor so she could hold the unadorned crystal up before her eyes and stare into its depths. Chance looked at the crumpled silver setting on the floor and then bent down and picked it up.
We're on our way to court, Tiffany. I can't stay. See you later.
If you like, Alan.
Tiffany waggled her fingers at him in a goodbye, nodded briefly to Hawk and Fisher, then stopped and stared at them thoughtfully. Hawk felt an unpleasant prickling at the back of his neck. Witches had the sight and were reputed to be able to see the future, as well as other things. Witches often knew things they weren't supposed to. Tiffany looked from Hawk to Fisher and back again. She frowned. It looked out of place on her pleasant, unlined face.
You have both been touched by wild magic. I can see it hanging about you like chains to a terrible past. You bring blood and change. You have two shadows behind and before you. I see you descending, going down and down to an awful place. Ugh, you scare me. I can see the blue moon in your eyes.
That's enough, Tiffany.
Chance took her by the arm and pulled her firmly away from Hawk and Fisher.
We have to be going now.
He gathered up Hawk and Fisher and led them away. Tiffany watched them go with wide eyes. Chance looked at the silver filigree in his hand, the delicate workmanship crumpled and ruined, and put it back inside his jerkin.
Maybe she'll want it later.
Oh, humans in heat! Is there anything more embarrassing?
Sir Vivian looked thoughtfully back at the young witch, and then at Hawk and Fisher, but he waited till they'd left the magician's hall before raising the subject. He leaned in close, his voice low, as though he didn't want his own people to hear what he was saying.
What was all that about? What did she mean?
Damned if I know. Sounded like a prophecy of some kind, but I've never put much faith in such things.
She mentioned the blue moon.
So she did. She also claimed to channel Princess Julia, but since Julia is definitely still very much alive...
She's a witch. They see too much of the world. Their minds don't work like ours do.
I don't think Tiffany's mind works like anybody else's. It's a wonder to me she can even tie her own bootlaces.
Which is her fairly low-level magic users. Why do they have such a presence here?
The Queen puts great faith in the Sisters of the Moon. She has officially asked the Academy to investigate the matter of the King's death. It seems she doesn't entirely trust the Magus or his investigation. Can't think why.
And since Tiffany is quite definitely the most powerful, if not the most experienced, witch the Academy has ever produced, the Mother Witch put her in charge of the investigation.
He didn't sound too happy about it.
She's barely left the Academy, spent most of her life behind their walls. How we do things in the real world is still something of a mystery to her.
Innocent, but powerful. A dangerous combination.
Oh yes, much like me after I left St. Jude's. Single-sex institutions have a lot to answer for.
How does the Magus feel about this involvement of the witches?
So far, he's completely ignoring them.
Sir Vivian seemed to have forgotten he wasn't speaking to Hawk.
The Magus has always been very good at not seeing things he doesn't want to see.
I'm surprised we haven't seen him yet. I was expecting him to be there to greet our return. I mean, this whole journey south was mostly his idea.
The Magus is currently attending the court.
Sir Vivian shared a look with Chance that Hawk caught, but couldn't interpret.
The Magus spends a lot of time at court these days.
How about the Shaman? Another face conspicuous by his absence. It doesn't seem like the castle without him bursting into other people's gatherings to make a speech or pick a fight.
No one's seen him all day, which means he's plotting something again. The Shaman is always most dangerous when he's not around. That man never chooses a straight line if he can find a more devious one. If I thought I could enforce it, I'd ban him from the castle, but...
Yes, but...
He's much more than he seems to be. But then, that's true of a lot of people here at Forest Castle.
Including you?
Oh, of course.
Hawk stopped abruptly as something on the wall to his right caught his attention. Fisher followed his gaze and stopped with him. There on the wall before them, 9 feet tall, were the official portraits of Prince Rupert and Princess Julia, living legends of the Demon War. Prince Rupert stood tall and heroic, heavily muscled inside formal plate armor chased with gold. A single straight scar ran down the wrong side of his face, and he still had both his eyes. The artist had given Rupert's face a noble, almost saintly look. Princess Julia stood barely 5 feet tall, wearing a long flowing gown of midnight blue with gold and silver piping. Diamonds gleamed brightly on rings and bracelets and necklaces, and her long blonde hair was piled on top of her head in an intricate style. Hawk and Fisher studied the images in silence for a long while.
We never looked that good in our lives.
Right. No one's ever going to recognize us from these. Talk about idealized. No wonder we're such a disappointment compared to them.
Don't worry. We'll soon make our mark. In someone's forehead, if necessary.
They both jumped as they realized someone was standing right there beside them. He definitely hadn't been there a moment before. He had suddenly and silently appeared out of nowhere. While Hawk waited for his heartbeat to return to something like normal, it occurred to him that such a practice could quickly become extremely irritating.
Good evening. I am the Magus.
Of course. You would have to be.
Hawk glowered at the Magus to show how unimpressed he was, but he took his hand away from his axe. Fisher pushed her sword back into its scabbard. The Magus was a few inches less than average height, with a round, calm face under a sparse, mousy haircut. His eyes were a faded blue, and his mouth held a constant, gentle smile. He had an almost absent-minded stare, and his gaze tended to drift, as though he was always thinking of something more important. His clothes were at least 30 years out of fashion, and ruthlessly formal, topped off with a huge, enveloping cloak of midnight blue, whose top rose up and over the Magus's head, as though watching over him. He was a man who knew things. Hawk knew this immediately, just from looking at him. Hawk looked quickly around to see Chappie backing away to hide behind Chance, his tail between his legs.
You bastard! You jump out of nowhere near me again, I'll bite your bum off.
Chappie, show some respect.
It smells wrong. High warlock successor, my hairy ass.
The Magus ignored both of them with the ease of long practice.
Welcome to Forest Castle, Captain Hawk, Captain Fisher. I've been expecting you for some time.
How could you? No one knew we were coming, instead of Rupert and Julia, and word hasn't had a chance to get ahead of us.
How do I know anything?
The Magus plucked a thornless, long-stemmed rose out of nowhere and presented it to Fisher with a slight bow. She smiled slightly, charmed despite herself.
Oh!
Show off.
I know why you're here.
The Magus's calm gaze drifted over to Hawk.
I can't think of anyone better suited than you to investigate poor Harold's murder.
How could he have been killed when he was protected by your magical wards?
Hawk could tell the Magus was trying to be charming, but he didn't feel like being charmed.
That is one of the few things I don't know. Technically speaking, it should have been impossible. No doubt you'll work out the answer in time. But then, answers aren't everything. I've always been more interested in questions. The truth rarely makes us happy, or even satisfied.
Is that why you've been unable to solve the king's murder?
Nothing is as it seems. But then that's business as usual in Forest Castle. Here there are secrets hidden inside enigmas, and false faces everywhere.
The Magus smiled at Hawk and Fisher.
I don't have to tell you that. The past is coming back to haunt and possess the present, and not all old ghosts have been laid to rest.
You know, just once I'd like to meet a sorcerer who wasn't so fond of his own voice. It always has to be riddles and mysteries. What the hell are you talking about? Can't you say anything that's open and straightforward?
Very well. The blue moon is coming back.
Hawk and Fisher looked at each other sharply, and then at Chance and Vivian. But judging by their startled faces, this was news to them, too.
Would you care to elaborate on that?
No. Follow me, please. Court is still in session, and I'm sure everyone there could use someone new to shout at.
He drifted off down the corridor. Hawk couldn't help noticing that the sorcerer wasn't casting a shadow. The long-stemmed rose Fisher held collapsed suddenly into a pale pink mist and floated away. Sir Vivian smiled.
Just another illusion. You can't trust anything where the Magus is concerned.
But he does know things from the past, the present, and the future. No one keeps secrets from the Magus.
Then why can't he see who the killer is?
Good question.
They set off after the Magus, heading for the court. They'd all pretty much run out of things to say, though they had a lot on their minds. Hawk was trying to figure out how he felt about the Magus. For a supposedly first-rate sorcerer, the Magus didn't have anything like the air of authority the High Warlock always had, even when in his cups. The High Warlock had always been a very dangerous man, and everyone knew it. The Magus, on the other hand, was quiet, serene, almost self-effacing. He didn't look like he had it in him to be threatening. But still, there was something about the man, something almost sinister, as though he knew many things he wasn't supposed to know. Knowledge can be power, particularly if blackmail is involved. Hawk pondered the implications of that all the way to the court. They eventually came to a halt before huge closed double doors that led into the courtroom. By tradition, no one was allowed entrance to the court once the doors were closed without express permission from the throne. Raised voices could clearly be heard from behind the doors, rising and falling in angry chorus. Hawk had a sudden strong sensation of déjà vu. He'd stood here once before, as a much younger Prince Rupert, waiting to be allowed into court to learn what his future would be. In those days, many people held power over him, or thought they did. Most of those people were long dead now, but even so, Hawk felt an unfamiliar uncertainty run through him, like a cold breath of his past, from memories he'd never been entirely able to forget.
They're all in there.
The Magus studied the closed doors as though he could see right through them.
The Queen, the Landsgrave, the Duke, all the would-be movers and shakers.
Landsgrave? I wasn't aware he was even back in the castle.
He's been speaking on and off for some time. Sir Robert always did have a lot to say. Unfortunately, so does everyone else. And they're all too busy fighting to be heard to listen to what anyone else is saying. No wonder they never get round to deciding anything. I often wonder if I should change them all into birds. At least then they'd make a pleasant noise. See if you can do anything with them, captains. Someone has to, before the bad times come.
So you keep saying. But until you're prepared to be more specific about the nature of his threat, you can't blame us for not taking you too seriously. If I want my future told, I'll ask a witch to read tea leaves in my cup.
Patterns can be seen in many places. As above, so below. Nature reflects the supernatural. I see many things, luckily not all at the same time. The future is constantly shifting, shaped and determined by the decisions we make every day. But some things are inevitable. Magic is going out of the world, but that too could be changed. Nothing is certain in this world, not even death in some circumstances. Right, Captains?
Hawk and Fisher, who had died once in a bloody cellar deep under the city of Haven, said nothing, but thought much. The Magus gestured lazily at the closed doors with a limp hand, and they flew open, swinging inward as though the huge slabs of oak were weightless, crashing back against the inner walls. The great reverberating sound silenced the acrimonious roar of the court for the moment, and the Magus led his party forward into the shocked silence. The packed crowd drew back to form a wide aisle for the Magus to walk down. It seemed no one wanted to get too close to him. Hawk and Fisher followed after him, looking about them to see how much the courtroom had changed in their absence. The vast, spacious hall looked much as they remembered, perhaps a little cleaner, illuminated now by modern gas lights rather than the foxfire lamps of old. The last of the evening light was falling through the gorgeous stained glass windows, most of it falling on the raised dais at the end of the hall, on which stood the ancient forest throne, carved in its entirety from a single huge block of oak. The Magus stopped some distance short of the throne and slipped his cloak from his shoulders. He then walked forward, leaving the cloak hanging unsupported on the air.
Don't get too close to the cloak. I haven't fed it recently.
He stopped directly before the throne and bowed courteously to the imperial figure sitting on it. Queen Felicity acknowledged his presence with the merest inclination of her crowned head. The Magus gestured for Hawk and Fisher to approach, and they did so, giving the hanging cloak a wide berth. They could feel the eyes of all the court upon them in the continuing, strained silence, but they did their best not to show it. Regardless of what authority they might or might not have, they still understood the importance of making a good first impression.
Your Majesty, may I present to you Captains Hawk and Fisher from the South, authorized by Prince Rupert and Princess Julia to investigate the terrible murder of your dear departed husband, King Harold.
Hawk and Fisher smiled at the Queen on her throne and nodded briefly. Strictly speaking, they should have bowed low or even knelt, but Hawk and Fisher didn't do things like that. Besides, it was important to get off on the right foot. Hawk studied the Queen openly as she studied him. Queen Felicity was tall, fashionably slender, but with a heavy bosom, and showed the world a sharp, bony face under thick blonde hair in ringlets so tightly curled they just had to be artificial. Her face was powdered so pale it seemed to be a mask, while her lips were a vivid scarlet. Her eyes were cold and knowing, and her tight-lipped smile was openly cynical. She was smoking a cigarette in a long, ivory holder. Her other hand held a cut-glass goblet, half full of wine. She was dressed fashionably but formally, her long golden gown studded with pearls and polished semi-precious stones. The ancient, simple crown of the forest line was almost hidden in the thick blonde curls. Her scarlet fingernails looked long and sharp enough to rip someone's throat out. Armed guards stood on either side of the throne. They looked tense, as though expecting a threat at any moment. Hawk was still wondering exactly what he should say to the Queen when there was a sudden interruption. A tiny figure, no more than 9 inches high, fluttered swiftly through the court, bobbing over the heads of the courtiers, some of whom ducked and gasped until finally the figure settled elegantly onto the Magus's left shoulder. He smiled at her fondly as she sat down, arranging herself comfortably. Hawk realized he was looking at a winged fairy. She was spindly thin, but normally proportioned, with a cloud of jet-black hair over a pinched face and pointed ears. Her wide, translucent wings held all the hues of the rainbow, shifting and sliding like the colors on the skin of a soap bubble. She wore a black basque, fishnet stockings, and heavy black eye makeup. She grinned at the Magus.
Hello, lover. Miss me?
Always, my dear.
The Magus beamed at her and then turned to Hawk and Fisher.
Captains, allow me to present to you that darling of the dark, mystical marvel, and leader of fashion, Lightfoot Moonfleet, last of the fairy kind to dwell in the world of mortal men.
Hello, darlings.
Her voice was quiet but quite distinct. Her smile was impossibly wide and her dark eyes sparkled brightly.
Always good to see new faces at court. The old ones can be terribly dull. We haven't had a decent scandal in ages.
Hawk was delighted at the sight of her. so much so that words stuck in his throat. No one had seen one of the wee folk in years, possibly decades, maybe centuries. People were always reporting sightings, but it usually turned out to be the moon or shooting stars. It was common belief that the fairies had been extinct for ages.
Delighted to meet you. Are you really the last of your kind?
The very last. My kind walked sideways from the sun long ago, out of history and into legend, in the place where shadows fall. Our time is over, sweetie. Magic is going out of the world, whether it wants to or not. And there's less and less room in your organized and scientific world for monsters and miracles and mysteries. And the fairies were magic. I only stayed behind because the mages needs me, whether the poor dear will admit it or not.
In a moment too fast for the human eye to follow, she suddenly grew in size, shooting up to nearly 7 feet tall, towering over Hawk. He would have liked to step back, but his legs didn't feel strong enough. Full size, her blatant sexuality was overpowering, almost crackling on the air. Her dark eyes smoldered, and her crimson mouth curved in a wicked smile. Her skin was pale, but perfect. She smelled strongly of rose petals and honey, with an underlying hint of musk. She reached out and took his chin in one petal-soft hand, and he felt his breath catch in his chest.
Of course. I've always had a weakness for the strong, silent type. And I do so love a hero.
And then she shrank rapidly back to her previous size, flying quickly back to the mages as Fisher's clenched fist swept through the place where her head had just been. Fisher recovered her balance in a moment and glared at the wee winged fairy back on the mages' shoulder again.
We're married. No trespassing, or I'll make your wings into doilies.
The fairy shrugged prettily.
Understood, dear. I was only just testing the waters. I was always taught that people should share their toys.
You so much as flutter in his direction again, and they'll be using what's left of you for a pipe cleaner.
The magus's eyes looked far away.
I'm pretty sure I used to have an owl on my shoulder. Or was it two ravens? Or perhaps a crow from the land of the dead? I've had to reinvent myself so many times, I sometimes confuse the details. I am large. I contain multitudes, especially on Tuesdays.
If we could return to more important matters.
Chance stepped forward beside Hawk and Fisher, gesturing urgently for them to look at the Queen again.
Captains, may I present to you Queen Felicity, Regent of the Forest Land, Protector of the Kingdom, Mother of the King-to-be, Stephen.
Good to be here. I just know we're going to get along wonderfully.
Chance winced.
Why aren't you Rupert and Julia?
The Queen leaned forward on her throne to glare at Hawk and Fisher.
They have to come back. It's their duty. They're needed. I don't want to be here, sitting in a dusty hall, in front of a crowd of half-wit politicians and social climbers, stuck on a wooden throne while my ass goes numb. But I'm here. Talk to me, captains, and make it very convincing, or I'll have the mages turn you into something more aesthetically pleasing, like a pair of throw cushions.
Well, you could try.
Hawk seemed not at all bothered by the Queen's harsh words and manner.
But trust me, it wouldn't get you anywhere. First, Fisher and I are immune to change spells. Second, we'd kill you before you got to the end of the sentence. We're Hawk and Fisher, and we don't take crap from anyone, on principle.
Those people nearest Hawk and Fisher and the mages pushed back hard against the press of the crowd, determined to get further away from any magical unpleasantness. The Queen's guards had their hands on their swords, awaiting her order to attack. Chance had his eyes shut and was shaking his head slowly. The mages studied Hawk and Fisher thoughtfully, still smiling his enigmatic smile. Surprisingly, Queen Felicity was also smiling. She leaned back in her throne, flicking ash off the end of her cigarette.
At last! Someone with balls! I like that. You have no idea how refreshing it is to get a straight answer out of someone around here. Of course, if you're dumb enough to try it again, I'll have you executed from a safe distance. I'm not so sure I really wanted Rupert and Julia back anyway. Legends and heroes can be so unsympathetic when it comes to dealing with everyday realities and people's little weaknesses. So, Hawk and Fisher, talk to whomever you have to. Do whatever you have to, but find my husband's killer. I want his head on a spike. Whatever else you might discover along the way is probably best kept to yourselves, if you want to get out of this castle alive. Do we understand each other?
We do. I want his or her head on a spike, too.
The Queen glared at Fisher.
What about you?
Fisher had been deliberately keeping quiet, not wanting to draw the Queen's attention. As Julia of Hillsdown, she'd never had much to do with her sister Felicity. There were 8 princesses at the Hillsdown court, all living separate lives. Partnerships and conspiracies weren't unknown, sometimes against other sisters, but always from a distance, through intermediaries. It wasn't wise to get too close to somebody who might be your enemy tomorrow, or who might disappear today, if the Duke took a dislike to them. The sisters followed their own interests and led their own lives. Sophia was very religious and rarely left her rooms except to go to chapel. Althea lived and breathed politics, ignoring her sisters as mere dilettantes. And Felicity was mostly interested in men. There were rumors that the Duke had tried fitting her with a chastity belt, but she'd worn it out from the inside. As the youngest, Julia had been of least use to her other sisters, and so saw less of them than most, which suited her just fine. She was mostly interested in finding new ways of getting into trouble, perhaps as a way of getting her distant father's attention. Until she went too far, and the Duke sent her off to die. She and Felicity had mostly seen each other at a distance. Even so, Fisher was worried Felicity might recognize her, despite the intervening years and her new black hair.
Don't you have anything to say for yourself?
I'm Fisher. I work with Hawk. We'll find the killer. It's what we do, and we're very good at it.
And we don't need threats to motivate us.
You don't speak to the Queen that way, dammit!
Sure we do. We're here to find a murderer, not bow and curtsy and kiss hands. We'll do whatever we have to get at the truth, and we won't take piss off and die for an answer, no matter who it comes from.
That's what I like to hear. Most of this bunch takes 17 paragraphs and a non sequitur just to ask if they can leave the room. They wouldn't last 5 minutes in the Duke's court. There are a lot of questions that need answering about my Herald's murder, and I haven't been able to get straight answers out of anyone. Of course, I'm just the Queen. Maybe you can do better. If anyone's evasive, feel free to give them a good slap. 2 if they're a politician.
Hawk smiled and nodded and looked slowly around the packed court. The courtiers looked back, nonplussed. Openness and sincerity weren't something they were used to seeing at court. If only because if everyone spoke the truth about how they felt in public, there'd probably be a bloodbath. Hawk had been away a long time, but he had no trouble spotting patterns among the courtiers. There were political groupings, family clusters, and all the usual cliques, most of them busy glaring at each other or cutting each other dead with raised noses and averted gazes. Some things never changed. Hawk looked back at the Queen, who had just emptied her wine glass and was studying Hawk and Fisher with a bitter smile.
I sent my quester out in search of 2 living legends, and he comes back with a pair of scruffy-looking thugs. Typical of the way things are going these days. I suppose I need thugs, because we seem to have left the days of heroes behind us. And all we have left are politicians. The way of the future, they tell me. Not much of a kingdom for my son to inherit. The forest land isn't what it was. I should have stayed in Hillsdown. All right, it was a dump, but it never had any pretensions of being anything else.
She raised her glass again, realized it was empty, and pouted sulkily.
Where have all the heroes gone? Did they ever really exist? I don't suppose they'd have had much time for the likes of me, but I would have liked to meet a real hero just once. If only because he might have seen something in me.
She shook her head suddenly.
Oh, don't mind me. I'm just the Queen. Someone get me another drink. Are you sure there aren't any execution warrants for me to sign? That always cheers me up. Ah! Oh, this oak is hard on the buns. Someone bring me another cushion right now. Who the hell had the idea to build a wooden throne anyway? I live in fear of splinters, and if I get one in my... And just what do you want, Sir Martin?
She glared ominously at the courtier heading out of the crowd and up the steps toward her. He came to a stop beside Hawk and Fisher and smiled dazzlingly at the Queen. He was dressed in the very latest southern fashions, bright and gaudy as a peacock's tail, right down to the pink wig, pale blue eye makeup, and several heart-shaped beauty spots. But he still carried himself like a fighter, and the sword at his side was anything but ceremonial. He bowed to the queen and smiled graciously at Hawk and Fisher in the most patronizing way possible.
My apologies for intruding on your soliloquy, Your Majesty. But I think I speak for all your court in saying that we require more information on your chosen investigators' backgrounds. We don't know them. They could be anybody. One can quite understand that the legendary Prince Rupert and Princess Julia might not wish to return to a land where so much has changed in their absence, but at least they were known. These, forgive me, riffraff are hardly suitable for such a delicate undertaking. I mean, you can't expect the quality to answer inquiries from grubby little people like this.
And you are?
Sir Martin of Raven's Lodge. I speak for continuity, tradition, the unbroken line of aristocratic authority and achievement. And I can assure you that no one of substance will be answering any questions from you or your compatriot until we have strong and compelling evidence of your derived authority and written confirmation that you will observe confidentiality where necessary.
My wife and I were guard captains in the city port of Haven. We've investigated a great many murders in our time.
Haven? I have never heard of it.
The reaction of the court made it clear that while they might have sat still for questioning by living legends, they had absolutely no intention of being interrogated by nobodies. Particularly when they all had pasts, secrets, and motivations they'd prefer not to discuss at all. Hawk thought that just once it would have been nice if everyone could have been reasonable. But when in doubt, fall back on the tried and tested ways. Intimidation, sarcasm, and open brutality. Hawk glared about him, and under that cold, determined gaze, the courtiers quickly grew silent again. They knew a predator when they saw one. Hawk turned his glare on Sir Martin, who, to his credit, didn't flinch one bit.
Raise a hand against me, sir, and my people will cut you down.
Then we'll just have to kill them, too. We are completely impartial. We have no political, religious, or social preferences. We hate, loathe, and despise everyone equally. We may not be living legends, but we're the most frightening thing you and your people will ever see.